Welcome to the Moment of Truth podcast with myself, Leroy Britto. This is the second episode. We've got a great guest today in Wales and Cardiff Blues, Josh Navidi. If you don't know who Josh has got such an interesting life and journey on his way to captain in Wales, and hopefully you'll enjoy this. Just a bit of admin before we begin. This podcast comes out every Tuesday, so if you are enjoying it, please press subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. But if you're on Apple Podcasts, please be kind enough to leave a nice review. And if you want to keep up to date on any news, please follow me on Twitter on either at Leroy Britto or at Moment of Truth P2. That's the admin done. So let's go straight into my conversation with Josh. So our next guest on Moment of Truth podcast is Wales and Cardiff Blues, Josh Navidi. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Hi, mate. You all right?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thank you very much for doing this. Really appreciate taking the time out.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here.
Cool. So what have you been up to recently?
Well, with all this lockdown going on, just trying to stay sane, really. But I'm training a bit and getting a chance to actually do stuff around the house that normally in season I don't get a chance to do. So it's quite nice to have a break, really, and let the body get where it was before all the start of the season.
Yeah, just getting ready, you know, if and when. Things kick back on. You've obviously just had a bit of a rest, really, a bit of recovery.
Yeah, well, it's just keeping the body in check, and it's nice to have this bit of a break because last year was a bit flat out with the World Cup and all the went on before it. So it's quite nice to have this bit of a break now and actually chill around the house and do stuff that I need to do that I normally won't get done.
Yeah. I've been given the list by my missus, and I've done nothing towards it, so I just keep putting her off.
I've given a list to my missus to do.
I want to talk about obviously the Moment of Truth, but just get to know you a little bit. So just obviously seeing you around Cardiff and how we first met, and I suppose how the first relationship is when I'd done the little gig at the training camp for you guys, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was quality. Fair play. I don't know I was on edge. It was because you don't know what's going to happen. Because I thought, are you going to start picking on all the boys and all that and just rip into them?
Because you could. Well, that's the thing. So when Dylan got in touch with me and he asked me, and I thought, okay, what do I do? And I turned up to. It's obviously this is your training camp. This is your place, and I'm never like the type of comic to like just rip into people. But it wasn't a normal gig because it was like 7 o'clock in the evening. Nobody was drunk. And as Dylan said, like, everybody was just on edge because they didn't want to get ripped into. So it was just a weird atmosphere, especially for me, just being a comic and seeing you guys there. So luckily it went down quite well, but it was still a bit awkward.
No, it was quality. It was, at the start, it was a bit edgy, but then the boys got into it then. Because the boys probably is he going to pick on me if I start laughing or comment? But no, it was good. Real good to have you in.
Yeah. Good stuff. So obviously wanting to talk about rugby and your career and I suppose those pivotal moments which almost defined you and set you up for your career. So where do you want to start? What's your story?
Mine's all over the place. So that's the thing. A big part like in Bagend, like is a big part of growing up that most of the boys probably play rugby, and is obviously Bryn Terg and Bagend Athletic are two sides. So just growing up in that area and doing quite well with both teams, playing for club and school, not set me up, but it was a good starting place. And then I ended up going to New Zealand probably 2 days after my last GCSE.
Tell me about that, because that's really interesting, and that's you don't hear about things like this. People, 16 packing up and going to New Zealand.
Yeah, it was a bit mad. So like when I was younger, we were going to emigrate out to New Zealand, with the family businesses and all that, we ended up staying. And then it was like we used to have a family home up in North Wales as well, because that's where my mum's from, and like all my mum's side of the family's from. So we had a house up there. So we drive up there. Normally, me and my dad would go in his van, and then my mum would go up with my brother in a separate car. And then my dad just asked me, oh, do you still want to go to New Zealand? I was like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind. And then this was probably, I don't know, September time, like a year before. So then I knew I was going to New Zealand that year. So then we ended up literally just booking a flight, like, I think it was like two weeks before or something like that. And then ended up going out there. And then when we landed, it was mayhem because of the jet lag and all that. You don't know what scope.
Of course.
So we landed and then ended up staying in this small B&B. And then the next day, we were still like jet lag. My dad is just dragging me around Christchurch. And he's taking me from one place to another, trying to find apartments to rent and all that. So obviously estate agents called realtors over there, same as America. Yes, yeah. So that was a bit mayhem, and then caught a cold as well. But we ended up speaking to people. They said the best thing to do is go to college rugby is quite big out there. So the age I was first 15 rugby, so that's your A levels. That's where most of the homegrown talent comes from. So we ended up somehow just turning up to Rugby Park where the Canterbury and Crusaders train. And it was a game on, so it was two rival sides. So Christchurch Boys High v Christ College, which is linked to Brecon, they were playing, and it's like a big rivalry. So we sat there, and there's about 4,000, 5,000 people just watching it.
For a college game, yeah?
Yeah, for a college game. It was mental, and it was on TV and all that, and which you end up start speaking to people. And then I think it was the next day or something, we ended up going back to the same place, basically knocking on the door of Canterbury, where Canterbury and Crusaders train. And they were like, yeah, come in. Mm-hmm. And they were more than welcome to take us in. And then Richie showed us around the place and all that. And then we ended up sitting down with Matt Sexton, who was he was head of academy there. Now he was head coach in South Africa and all that, one of the club sides out there. But he spent an hour, 2 hours with us, sat down, just talking about what they do, etc. And then he ended up, it'd be good to link up with a school. So I'd done a week in the academy, and then...
So I was just thinking. So he took that time out, spent an hour with you without knowing anything about you in terms of you weren't a prospect or anything like that.
Yeah,
he was a nice guy.
Yeah, mate, it was crazy because they were so warm and all that. They're like a kid and his father just turn up, knock on the door and go, yeah, we'll show you around and all that. And it was bizarre because the day before we went, my dad knew Scott Gibbs quite well. He turned up with a card for someone at the Crusaders, in the same building. So,
if
we needed help when we were out there, he said, oh, just give this guy a ring and he'd be able to help you out. So we didn't use the card, but then we ended up saying, oh, when he sat down and all that, we said, oh, yeah, Scott Gibbs gave us a card, this guy's name. I can't remember who's name was on the card, but he literally goes, oh yeah, all right, fair enough. And then it was crazy. So then from that went to, I looked at Christchurch Boys High and St Bede's, and then at St Bede's they have an ESOL program, so it's for international students who want to come over and play rugby and learn English normally because there were a lot of Japanese boys.
Yeah, so English is a foreign language type thing.
Yeah, so they would come over. So obviously I can speak English and all that. So the first year I was there, I just done all the rugby training side of things because I turned up not late to the season, but everything's kicked on and me and my dad used to say it was a day off. We'd go out and travel around New Zealand a bit and then come back. But then
so was it just you and your dad or the whole family over?
So at the start it was me and my dad, and then later on then my brother and my mum came out there. We traveled all of New Zealand. And then the second year, I went out there on my own. And then my parents came out, like, on the first game. So I think I was probably there a month on my own at the start.
You must have grown up quite quickly.
Well, yeah, you could say that I matured a bit out there, but I'm not too sure about that. But then, so ended up at St. Bede's, played there for, the rest of the season, really. And then this second year then, done the full season. We finished third in New Zealand overall. We were top of South Island. We had this thing called like Moesca Cup. So it's like the Rantilly Shield. So it's basically you defend the cup at home. So the only time it really swaps hands when it's in the top four. So that's the only time when you defend it away from home.
Okay.
So if you win it, so we basically won like the year before, we had the Moesca Cup, and then the second year then, obviously we didn't lose a game, so we kept it until we went up to the top four. But it's quite a big thing in New Zealand to actually have it, because some teams won't even have the chance to have it. Like, and then we toured again, like, around New Zealand.
Were you getting much attention?
Obviously. In what way now, with playing wise, or
in terms of obviously you're new to New Zealand and you've joined this team and they're doing really well, so I'd assume you'd stand out within there, even at a high standard within obviously New Zealand rugby.
Yeah, so I had I would have, like, because I came back because my dad basically said, oh, what do you want to do? And then he's like, at the end of the day, you're a Welsh lad out in New Zealand. So he said, like, at the end of the day, you want to play for your country, don't you? So that's why I came back. But then if I, I left after the last top four game, I would have played, for Canterbury, under 18s then. So I would have picked.
Okay.
They told me that I would have been picked in that, and I had a offer an academy contract as well. And then they have New Zealand schools as well, but because I wasn't a resident, I couldn't get picked for that. But then they said they were trying to get me registered and trying to do it, and there's no way that they could
under the radar
around it. Yeah, so decided to come back home after that. And then ended up sending my CV to Ospreys and Blues.
So you were unknown then, were you, back in Wales? You know, obviously you were away for 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to make a CV. So in the South, I basically put with my, who I played for back here. And then when I went over there, what we did, etc. I'm sure I got my laptop somewhere. I came the Press Cup was in the South Island, comp we played for. So I came top of that. So I had to put that on there. And then I had some DVDs from, because the games got filmed. I just sent them. And then the Blues seemed more interested. And then just went that way, really. And then started the academy. I think it was October, November time. I started in the academy. It was a month trial. And then eventually sat after that month, signed with the Blues for my first academy contract.
Oh wow! So that must have been just a touch for the academy coaches there. You just turn up with a TV, DVDs. It's I was doing this back in New Zealand, and I'm Welsh.
it was mad, because everyone asked me, because I had Ospreys trials when I was younger before I went.
Okay,
but I knew I was going to New Zealand, so I just I didn't go to them. My dad was if they if they really want you, they'll come get you, kind of thing. But I knew I was going to New Zealand, so it wasn't a big deal to actually to stay here and do the trials and all that. Maybe my path would have been different if I stayed, but it was a good learning curve and experience wise. I know obviously, people say it's like the home of rugby and all that, but like just the people in general, it was amazing. And it was such a nice country to actually get a chance to explore and actually see different things to what you're not used to normally, like your normal day to day.
Yeah, well, to be honest, fair play to your father for obviously giving you the, you know, giving you that platform and supporting you with
this. I was lucky really, because when I came back during the first year, like over Christmas and stuff, I'd work full time in the gym, and I would probably, after school, I probably would have finished when I was my GCSEs. I probably would have worked full time in obviously my father's gym, and like we've got other businesses and stuff. But yeah, I would have been there full time when I came back. Then I was working full time when I was in the academy, and then it got to a stage when I just basically did an academy training then.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's there's not many players who've had that journey in terms of that pathway.
No, that's the thing. I've had like a couple of boys have been sent over there to play and stuff, and normally I've been like called a few times from like different clubs saying, "Oh, so and so is getting sent out there. What do you recommend?" And I just always recommend the school, like go play school or even go to the same school. Like I try and push St. Bees because I went there, but it's just the platform that, like, what you can see that's happening over here the last probably 4 or 5 years with the Cardiff and Vale College and colleges have like an academy system in there, so the boys can train through their weight, but they're still getting the benefit of still going to school and actually getting like A levels.
Instead of
say you're 16, you get put into academy system, and then because you're training so much, you don't get like, it's quite intense and you don't have time to go to school. But the big focus now from WRPA is actually helping boys to get that chance to actually study or get like some sort of trade or qualification while they're
in
the academy system, which is spot on, to be honest.
100%. In terms, and just making, you know, more rounded individuals, because not everybody's going to make it to the elite level. So you need to make sure that you've got that backup plan.
Nah, if you compare it to like say club rugby, when I grew up playing with a bunch of boys, like not meant to brag or anything, but we had like a wicked team, and we never we lost probably one game from under eights to, well, I finished when I was under 14s, but we lost about one or two games, and the boys there, like probably I think from my actual team is about four boys who've actually played like, or probably not six, who've actually played like Premiership rugby up. So there's a couple of boys who played, like one boy's played sevens. There's obviously Lloyd Ashley, the Ospreys. I grew up playing with them. So there's a fair few boys, but you should see from how many people you've played with, how many people actually make it as a pro, because it's so competitive. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, so they always got to have that backup in place. Like, I've been lucky because my dad had the gym, so I knew if it didn't work out for me, that I could go work there and obviously have a job. But some of the academy boys have never had a job, which is bizarre, but it's the way that it works these days.
So then you came back, obviously signed with the Blues, and that's your only club. That's where you've been, and then moving forward, you got the call up for Wales, didn't you? Back in 2013.
Yeah, so that was my first cap. Probably wasn't the best cap start for international rugby. So I broke my nose and got knocked out in the second test out there, and we lost as well to Japan, but. Luckily enough, they beat South Africa in the World Cup like a couple of years after, which was a breath of fresh air, really. But
yes, I remember.
But it was such a hot day that we played. Like in the World Cup, it was like I was expecting. I knew what the weather was like. I knew it was going to be cooler. But I remember when we landed, when the first test was going on, I was like water boy, and I was like, "Oh, this is mental." It was like later on in the day, so I think it was like 5-6 o'clock they played, and the second test was at like 2 o'clock. It was like 28, 29 degrees, and it was like 80% humidity. I've never experienced anything like it, and it's probably the hottest game that I've ever played in, because we had to have water breaks as well. Because they were used to it, and they were a fit team and a good side at that time. Like, everyone probably, if you said Japan, you'd write them off like back then. But when we played them, I was like, this is like the way they played. I said they're going to do in the next World Cup, they're going to do well, because Eddie Jones was there. And so it wasn't the best start. And then I had my 4-year gap.
How did you deal with that? What was it like for you during that time?
Yeah, like the first, I'd say like the first autumn and Six Nations was like you're just thinking, oh, what have I done or anything like that. And you're just waiting for like your name to get called out. And then when it doesn't come then, I kind of just thought, well, at the end of the day, I need to just play my rugby for the Blues and just make sure I'm playing my best rugby. If they don't want to pick me, that's down to them. But I just need to perform for the Blues week in, week out. And then hopefully eventually one day it'll come. But at the stage, I thought when I did have my second cap, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get picked for this tour. Because I used to joke, I joked to the boys, I was like, oh, this is my Lions tour. Like every 4 years I get a cap. And like before it, I was like, oh, no, I'm probably not going to get picked. They're going to probably go for maybe a couple of younger boys or have you. And then got picked then, and then had two caps then that summer. And then it's come thick and fast since then, really. It's been crazy. So I think, like probably for me, that was a big part, like those two tests, playing all right, and then getting the chance to actually have my first home game in the autumn against Australia. And just actually having that chance again, like when all the coaches were there, obviously Gats was away with the Lions. So it was good to actually show what I could actually do on a proper stage at home. So it was nice. It was even better because I had like all my family here, my brother as well, like being able to come, and all my friends, to actually play in the Millennium Stadium, because that's what you dream of at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just putting that red jersey on and going through the tunnel and playing at home.
It's been a journey for you, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, going around the world.
It's a roller coaster, to be honest. But no, the last couple of years has been fantastic. And just getting the chance to actually play in the Six Nations in the autumn has been amazing. And what I've dreamed of as a kid growing up is playing in a World Cup, and having that chance to actually go out there and actually like making it to the semis. I know I was injured, but
the boys
getting there, and it could have been so close to actually getting to that final. So it was an amazing experience, and it's something I've always wanted to do growing up. It's the main thing, really, going to a World Cup for me.
So that was my chat with Josh. I'm sure you agree he's got such a unique and interesting story, and hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. We're back next week on Tuesday when I'm going to be speaking to athlete Jamie Bolsch. I'm really excited about that episode. So that's it from me. Stay safe, and I'll catch you next week.